All right, you guys, good morning. I am realizing that I need to edit my little bio because now my daughter's 5 and a half and my son's going to be 4 in January and number 3 is coming in February. So we are very excited. Okay, so a little bit, yeah, about me. My little initials. So I'm a nurse, I'm an RN, I have my bachelor's BSN, and then I have my CPN, so I'm a certified pediatric nurse. Pediatric nursing is my heart and my soul and the love of my life, and I truly am so passionate about what I do. A little bit about vascular access. I essentially service the entire hospital. I spend about 20% of my shift in the ER, which is kind of a little backstory of how I started the Medical Mamas, and I'll share that with you guys in a few. And then I spend a lot of time in our ICUs. So I go between NICU, our small baby unit, our pediatric ICU, and our cardiac ICU. So I have a lot of exposure to a lot of things. And that's kind of what started my heart behind the Medical Mamas, which is a business that I own, and basically I compare it to like a jewelry or like a Tupperware party. You get a group of your mom friends, your dad friends, your parents, your uncle, aunt, nannies, whoever's watching your kids, you host me in your home, and I bring my mannequins and a huge 12-page handout, and I go over infant, pediatric, adult, CPR, and choking, as well as a detailed pediatric 101 course that covers kind of the most common ailments that brings kids into the ER. And so it's a super thorough 2.5-hour course that is jam-packed with information. And to date, I'm so humbled to say that my course has saved 8 kids' lives. And so I don't take it lightly. It's really cool. But I want to empower families and parents and nannies to, number one, be their child's best advocate. And be their voice, because we all know these little peanuts don't have the voice, right? And so when you're in front of a medical professional, it can feel super intimidating. But my goal is to empower parents to be their child's voice and to make the best decisions for their kids. And then also just to provide education, because it is mind-blowing to me how little education there is in the community for things that save lives. And so that's kind of where the Medical Mama stems from. It was just a lack of education in the community, and I felt like I had a good idea to fill it, and now I am like super busy teaching lots of classes, and it is so, so, so special to me to be in this place and in this capacity to be able to get to know families at this level, but also have families walk away feeling like, oh my gosh, I can take a deep breath. If my kid's sick, I know what to do. So it's been a really cool experience. My husband and I are high school sweethearts. So we've been together, I don't even know, almost 17 years, I think. It's just like crazy since we were 15. And he's in law enforcement. And so together we're like the cop nurse, you know, typical like high school sweetheart, whatever. So today, first, I want to pray over us, if that's okay. I think this information I'm going to go over is really heavy, and so I want to be respectful that if you, like, need to take a deep breath, some of us are postpartum, some of us are pregnant, like, it's a lot. So feel free to, like, take a deep breath, go outside, because it is heavy, and I do talk pretty realistically about a lot of what happens and why we're doing and teaching you, or why I'm teaching you this information. And so I want to be respectful that there's lots of emotions surrounding it, but also just pray that God would protect you guys and your babies. If you guys will just bow your heads with me. Dear Lord, I thank you for this day. Thank you for a cool fall morning that we get to come together, Lord, and have community and friendship and conversations, Lord. I pray that you would be present in the midst of them. I pray for every single mom in this room, God, that you would just give their hearts a space to receive this information, Lord, and their brains a place to process this information, God, that they would store it and tuck it way, way, way in the back somewhere, but that God forbid they ever needed it, Lord, that you would just bring it to the table, God, that you would give them confidence in raising these babies, that you would give them ears to hear what it is that you want for them as parents, Lord, and that you would give them a sense of peace whenever their kids are sick, God. We are reminded, Lord, that these kids are not ours, they're yours. And so we give up any sense of control or fear or anxiety that revolves around illnesses, Lord. I pray that you would protect these kids and keep them healthy, God, and that through today and through this education, God, that they would just feel empowered to be their kid's voice, and that they would feel empowered and feel prepared, God forbid, of an emergency. And Lord, I just pray that you would strengthen the marriages in this room, because parenthood is not for the faint of heart, Lord. And so I just pray over marriages in this room, God, that you would just fill these husbands and wives as they raise these babies, raise them as disciples to know who you are, Lord, and to spread your good word. And so I thank you for this morning, Lord. I thank you for this opportunity, and I just pray, God, that they would feel loved and peace and excitement for the future of parenthood as they leave these doors. In your name, amen. Okay, so we're going to get right into it. Okay, who's done a CPR class before? Okay, wait, let me ask this really quick. Who's not in medicine and has done a CPR class before? Okay, out of those of you that have your hands raised, who can tell me what CPR stands for? That's a problem. Oh, you can. Okay, I want to hear it. Great. One out of like 25 of you knew what that meant. So this is honestly my problem, okay? I don't know how to, can I make this taller? I'm so bad. Oh, there we go. Whoa. Okay, so this is my like big issue, okay? Because we all take CPR classes and we all come out certified and we all do it to check the box, and no one knows what the heck they're actually doing. And so my job is to make this as simplified as possible so that you guys can walk away feeling like I actually know why I'm doing CPR. I actually understand the steps of doing CPR, and I actually understand what the outcome hopefully should be, right? And so the amount of people that I've asked that question, I start every class asking that question, and it is mind-blowing that usually not a single person knows what it is. They're just like, I'm CPR certified. I'm like, well, what does that mean? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, oh, we're on to a great start. So I'm gonna go over like the basics of anatomy. How much time do I have again, 45 minutes or something? Okay, so like 10 to 10:45, does that sound right? I don't know. 10:30? Someone tell me. Okay, thank you. Okay, so anatomy and physiology 101. Okay, so like my friend in the back said, CPR stands for cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Okay, cardio is your heart, pulmonary is your lungs. Resuscitation, this person's dead, we're trying to bring them back to life, okay? So cardiac, right? Cardio, your heart. Your heart's function in your body is your pumper, okay? So your heart pumps oxygenated blood from the lungs to the body. So when we're sitting here, our average heartbeat, 60 to 100 beats per minute. Because I'm stressing you all out, it might be slightly higher than 100. That's okay. The point is that your heart is pumping oxygenated blood to your body, okay? So we're perfusing our brain, our kidney, our stomachs, our fingers, our toes, all the things. And so that's your heart's job. Now, pulmonary, lungs, your lungs' job is to grab blood that does not have oxygen or deoxygenated blood from the body, oxygenate it, spin it through a little cycle, ship it to the heart so that the heart pumps it out. So your heart and lungs work together, okay? So your lungs take deoxygenated or lack of oxygen from the body, cycle it, give it oxygen, ship it to your heart, and your heart pumps it out to the body. Is that clear? Okay. So together, they never stop, right? So as, like I said, as we're sitting here eating breakfast, enjoying ourselves, our heart is pumping without us having to think about it, and our lungs are taking breaths in as our body needs air. So together, they work really efficiently. Now, when someone goes into an arrest, it's either a cardiac arrest, so the heart stops, or it's a pulmonary arrest, the lungs stop. And secondarily, the opposite will stop eventually as well. So if your heart stops, you have a massive heart attack. If your lungs aren't getting oxygen from the heart, guess what? You're gonna stop breathing. If you get really bad pneumonia and your lungs fill with fluid and they cannot perform the job of oxygenation, guess what's gonna stop? Your heart. So you either go into a cardiac arrest or a pulmonary arrest. And that's what causes someone to go down, and that's what causes somebody to have to perform CPR on that person or cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Cool? Okay. Now, the American Heart Association, really during COVID, did a lot of studies and found that there is something called hands-only CPR, meaning in the event that you witness a stranger go down and you don't feel comfortable going mouth to mouth, you can still help increase their chance of survival by just performing compressions, meaning hands-only CPR. Because most of you in this room have babies or a spouse that you love, for the most part, I'm gonna teach you to go mouth-to-mouth on them as well. And today, for like the intensive time, I'm just gonna be covering infant and pediatric CPR. When you take my class, or if you ever have questions, I will be in the back at one of somewhere with like some handouts and stuff. But when I teach in real life, my full class, it also covers adult as well as choking, and then, like I said, a detailed pediatric course. So there's way more to this than what you're getting today, but I'm just trying to speed it all up. Also, with that said, because I'm pregnant and I chase two toddlers and I work night shift, my brain is mush. So pregnancy brain is a real thing. So if you see me referring to my handout, it's just because I literally go black sometimes and I like have nothing up here. So I apologize. I know you guys can relate. Okay, so we're gonna start with pediatric CPR. So now that you guys have like kind of a rough understanding of like the anatomy of the body and how our hearts and lungs work, we will start with pediatric CPR. So pediatric CPR is known as a child that's 1 year old to adolescence. Now, if you ask me, the size of a 1 year old versus like a 12 year old is vastly different. So I will teach you a couple different ways that you can perform CPR, but across the board, you're gonna find very similar themes in everything I'm teaching you today. So if you walk out of here, you're like, oh my gosh, how many numbers did she say? What's the ratio? If you forget everything I tell you, remember these three things: push deep, push hard, and push fast, okay? So don't stress about the numbers. It's a lot of information this early in the morning. Okay, so I'm gonna pretend that this is a child, so like maybe like a five-year-old or a three-year-old. But again, the age range for this, what I'm about to teach you, is one to adolescence. Can you guys see up here? You guys can see it? Okay. Okay, so across the board, no matter how old the person is, if you witness somebody arrest, or let's say you walk downstairs and little Johnny was watching Bluey, and all of a sudden Johnny's plumped over on the couch, right? No matter what you do across the board or who you're trying to save, the number one, like, first thing you need to check off your checklist is to make sure your scene is safe. So you cannot save somebody else if you're putting your life on danger, okay? So let's say, God forbid, a kid's riding an e-bike, gets hit by a car, is in the middle of the street laying there, and you want to go help the kid, but there's cars flying by you 60 miles an hour. It is not expected that you're going to put your life on the line. You're going to stop traffic first, get somebody to help you control traffic, and then carefully go out into the street, right? So you're not just going to run out and be a hero because you're going to get hit. So scene safety across the board is always number one. From there, you're gonna tap and shout this person. So let's say it's a three-year-old, like, Johnny, Johnny, are you okay, are you okay? Johnny's not responsive. And all you're doing in this moment is you are checking to see, is this person's eyes waking up? Are they moving their body? Are they responsive at all to my voice or my touch? If they are not responsive, from there, you're gonna shout for help. More importantly, if you're in like a park or somewhere where you see people walking by, right? If you're in your house, you can shout as loud as you can. Your neighbors may or may not hear you, but shouting for help is always nice, specifically in a community setting, so that you can get extra hands to help you manage this person. From there, if your phone is on you, which most of the time our phones are like right here, you're gonna call 911 and put it on speaker. But in the pediatric and infant population, you are not going to take time away from initiating CPR in order to call 911. And the reason is because kids and babies most of the time go down for a pulmonary arrest, meaning they have sick lungs. So they get the flu, they get RSV, they get pneumonia, and their lungs stop and then their heart stops secondarily. But most of the time kids are lung issues. So we wanna begin CPR, then go get our phone. So we're not gonna delay the initiation of CPR to call 911. If our phone is right here and it's not delaying me, I'm gonna call 911. Or if she's right there, I'm gonna say, you call 911 because we're at the park and I happen to see another mom, right? And then the expectation is that person will then bring their phone to you, put it on speaker by you, because dispatch is trained to walk you through how to do CPR. And they do it really well, really calmly, while you're frantic and anxious. Okay, so my scene is safe. I'm not gonna get hit by a car. I've tapped and shouted for responsiveness. Johnny, are you okay? Are you okay? Johnny's not answering me. Johnny's not opening his eyes. Johnny's not waking up. I'm shouting for help. I see a friend. She's calling 911, bringing her phone to me. And then from there, I'm going to essentially begin compression. So that's like the basic 101 on scene safety and initial assessment. Now, before I begin compressions, there's a couple things. Number one, I want this person on a hard surface. You cannot do adequate compressions if there's anything plush underneath the person. So even if they're on a couch or a bed, on a boat, like a cushioned seat, whatever, you want to bring them down to the ground carefully because you cannot compress adequately if there's any sort of give. Okay, so you have to be on a hard surface, number one. Number two, you wanna do your best to expose the chest so you can see the visualization of the chest. And then number three, before you begin compressions, you're gonna lay eyes on this person's chest. So you're gonna get down to chest level and you're gonna assess for rise and fall of the chest. Are they taking a breath? The reason that's important is because some kids pass out, but they're still breathing and their heart's still pumping, but they're passing out for high blood sugars or low blood sugars or God knows what, if they're older, they took some weird drug and whatever. You want to make sure that they're not breathing before you begin CPR. So hard surface, my chest is exposed as best as it can be. I look at the chest for 5 seconds, but no longer than 10. If they're not taking a breath and I do not see the chest rise and fall, meaning like taking a breath, I'm gonna begin compressions. Sounds good? Any questions so far? Okay. So how am I gonna do compressions on a child? So like I said, pediatric CPR ranges from age 1 to adolescence, which is a huge gap and a vastly large size difference. So depending on the kid's size, I have the option of using 1 versus 2-handed CPR. So the younger the kids, like 1 to 2 years of age, I personally use one hand most of the time, unless they're like a super chunky, huge two-year-old. But most of the time, it's one-hand CPR. As they get older, 3, 4, 5, 6, older, two-handed CPR, okay? So, anatomical landmarks for compressions. So, our heart is actually mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. Now, the laughing joke with mom groups is like, is it before breastfeeding or after breastfeeding, right? Because things change. So imagine our pre-breastfeeding chest anatomy. So mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. If you feel it's that hard, like bony prominence right in the middle of your chest, that's where your heart sits. It's just tilted slightly to the left because the left side of your heart is bigger than the right side because that's your main pumping side. But it really is dead center in your chest. So what you're gonna do is you're gonna take the heel of your dominant hand and you're gonna find that landmark, which again is why I always tell families if you can expose their chest, it helps you know exactly where to go. But don't stress it by trying to fumble with their clothing. It's not a big deal if they have like a t-shirt on, okay? So mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone, you're gonna take the heel of your dominant hand and you're gonna place it right there. Now, like I said, you can either do this one-handed or bigger kids, you can go two-handed. If you're really tiny and you feel like it's like you're personally small, you might need to just go two hands off the bat. It really just depends. But what I will say, and parents ask all the time, like, oh, am I gonna hurt the child? I hate to say it, but they're dead and you can't make them deader. So it's better to push too deep and too fast and too hard than not deep enough, not fast enough, and not hard enough because you're gonna do more harm than good by doing the latter. You wanna push deep, hard, and fast. So don't be worried about breaking bones or hurting them. You can't make them deader. They're already gone. We're trying to bring them back. So there's really nothing you can do to make the situation worse. Any broken ribs or punctured lungs, we fix in the hospital. So don't let that stress you out because it is a little bit alarming when you do it for the first time, and I pray you guys never have to. Okay, so the heel of your dominant hand, like I said, mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. I'm gonna pretend this is a 5-year-old. I would compress my 5-year-old with 2 hands because I just don't think I'd be able to adequately compress with just one. I'm gonna take my opposite hand over my dominant hand. And then from here, you wanna make sure that you're really utilizing your body weight to do compressions versus your muscles. So if I'm compressing from back here, my back's gonna give out and I'm gonna get way too tired. You wanna make sure that you're fully over the person. Arms are locked out. There's a straight line from your wrist to your elbow to your shoulders. and you're using your body weight to push down on this person. And so you're compressing straight down. Again, you're doing the work of the heart externally for this person. On average, when people go down in an arrest, they have about 6 to 8 minutes of oxygenated blood as a reserve, just waiting to be pumped to the rest of the body. So by you doing compressions externally, you're helping perfuse the body with that oxygen, saving the brain, the kidneys, the liver, all the vital organs, okay? So we are going to perform in one cycle of CPR, 30 compressions to 2 breaths if I'm by myself. Now, if I have a partner, it switches to 15 compressions to 2 breaths, but I'll talk about that after, okay? So I'm pretending I'm by myself. The only help I have is my friend who called 911. She doesn't feel comfortable doing CPR, so she's just gonna stand there and watch. And I'm gonna begin at a 30 to 2 compression to breath ratio. So again, dominant hand is mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. My second hand is right on top. I'm straight locked out. I'm utilizing my body weight for these compressions. I'm gonna press straight down. Now there's 3 important things about compressions. Number one, your rate. You're compressing at a rate of 100 to 120 compressions per minute. Your depth in a pediatric patient is 1/3 the depth of the chest, which I don't know about you, but I don't happen to have a ruler in my back pocket. You're pushing deep, okay? And then the third most important thing is recoil. What the heck is that? So recoil, I like to equate it to, like, imagine you have a tub of water and a sponge, okay? So imagine you take your sponge, you dunk it in the water, and you let that sponge fully fill, okay? You take your sponge out of water, and you squeeze it to its max capacity, and you get all the water out of the sponge. It's totally empty. You bring that empty sponge back into the water, and you allow it to refill. That's what recoil means. That means that as you're compressing, in between each compression, you allow the chest to come back to its normal position. It's allowing the heart to refill with blood to fully max squeeze it. If I compress like this, it's a quivering heart, it's ineffective, and it's not gonna perfuse the body. So, same thing if I come off the chest, it's too much time off the chest. So what I'm saying is you're gonna push straight down and allow the chest just to return back to its normal position in between each compression. Does that make sense? Okay, so it's gonna, so like I said, I'm by myself, I'm gonna perform 30 compressions then give 2 breaths. So it's gonna look something like this. So our rate, again, 100 to 120 compressions per minute. So it's like, Staying Alive, that song. Newer school moms know Baby Shark. It's the same beat as Baby Shark. I don't know how to sing Baby Shark and count at the same time, so I'm not gonna try, but that's the same beat that you wanna compress to. Again, my depth is 1/3 the depth of the chest, about 1.5 inches deep. And then the third most important thing, again, is that recoil. In between each compression, I allow the chest to come back to its normal position. So it's gonna look something like this. Always count out loud, too, because you'll forget. If you have a partner, they won't know where you're at, so you always wanna make sure you're counting out loud. Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, staying alive. Stays the same. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Arms are locked out, shoulders over my wrists and elbows. 27, 28, 29, 30. Boom, 2 breaths, okay? And I'll go over breaths. So that's how you do compressions. It's a full body workout, even not pregnant. I'm usually sweating, but pregnant, I'm like really sweaty, so please forgive me. So from 30 compressions, you're then going to give 2 breaths. So again, I teach breaths because, well, you love your kids, right? And you usually love your spouse. So you can go mouth to mouth, but you can do CPR on a stranger without putting your mouth on them. You would just do compressions nonstop, and then you would hopefully have somebody to switch with you. If you have a partner, you are switching compressions, or whoever's compressing, every 2 minutes or 5 rounds of CPR. Because it's exhausting. You really can't effectively compress longer than a couple of minutes because you just get gassed. So if I was doing this to a 1-year-old, I'd be using one hand, it would be the same thing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way to 30. And then 2 breaths, okay? Any questions on compression so far? Okay. All right. After that, we're going to give two breaths. So the way we're going to give breaths to a person that's down in an arrest is you're going to perform what's known as a head tilt chin lift. Basically, what you're doing is you're opening their airway and you're tossing their tongue out of the way. Now, when you do this, I like to take the pinky side of my hand on their forehead. You're going to pinch the person's nose to occlude their upper airway. You're going to take your opposite hand on the bony part of their chin just to slightly move their head up. It's all you're doing. Head tilt, chin lift, boom, tongue's out of the way. You're going to create a seal with your mouth over their mouth. I'm going to take a normal inhalation in on my own. I'm going to head tilt, chin lift, put my mouth around their mouth, and then each breath I'm going to give, I'm going to exhale into their mouth to inflate their lungs each breath over the course of 1 second, 2 times. Head tilt, chin lift, nose pinch, open the airway, mouth around their mouth, right back to CPR. How much air are you giving kids? My one-year-old's so much smaller than my 13-year-old, so I'm gonna blow out their lungs. Okay, you're only giving air until you see their chest inflate. You're literally gonna see air move up and down. Up and down. It's going to mimic what it would look like if they were taking a breath. Oh, but what if they choked and I don't know if their airway's occluded? If that's the case, don't stress it. You don't want to waste time fumbling around with the breaths. You want to focus the most on compressions. Compressions save lives. Breaths are additional, which is why the AHA allows or started teaching hands-only CPR. People are mortified to go mouth to mouth, but they can pump on a chest. So don't stress about the mouth to mouth. The air, you want to focus the most on compressions because, like I said, the body has about 6 to 8 minutes of oxygenated blood on reserve. So, 30 compressions to two breaths. 30 compressions to two breaths. You're going to do this until either A, if you have not yet called 911, you're going to perform 2 minutes or approximately 5 rounds of 30 to 2 before frantically going to get your phone. If you get your phone, you're going to come right back to the person and resume starting with compressions. B, until help arrives. If, let's say, you're at the park, something happens, someone happens to run up, hey, I'm a nurse, I'm happy to help you, let me take over compressions. You're going to let them start with compressions because you're tired at that point, right? And then from there, if you have a helper, you're going to switch your compression to breath ratio from 30 to 2 by myself. I have a friend, it's a pediatric patient. Then I'm going to go to 15 to 2. Basically, what you're doing is you're giving twice the amount of breaths without taking too much time off the chest by having a partner. Your partner would be on the opposite side of the person. And if I'm the compressor, my partner would be sitting here, getting down real low with the head tilt, chin lift, nose pinch already happening. So when I'm like at 12, 13, 14, they're already ready to rock and roll. When I hit 15, it's a quick, seamless transition. They give two breaths and boom, right back to compressions. Same thing, if you have a partner, you're switching about every 2 minutes or approximately like 5 to 8 rounds because it's a quicker, pace because there's only 15 compressions per cycle. Questions on 1 or 2 person CPR on a pediatric patient? Yes.
Yeah,
it's a quicker transition, so there's nothing you can do that would affect, as long as you're out of my way while I'm compressing, anything you're doing here is not going to affect the compressions. I personally teach families, like, at 10, you should be, like, ready to rock, because 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 happens in, like, 2 seconds, and then you're ready to breathe, and then compression. So, again, you're doing compressions and breaths until help arrives. 911 shows up, the person starts moving, or you pass out because you're too physically tired, which hopefully would never happen, but that's the reality. Any other questions? Clear as mud. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, head tilt, chin lift. That's all you do. You're not putting your fingers in the mouth. Because if they are choking on something, you putting your fingers in their mouth is just going to shove it back deeper.
And if you tell them they're responsive.
Praise the Lord. Oh my gosh, we're out of this mess.
Like if they're not, but they still
be choking. Yeah, so choking is different. Choking is something that you don't make sound, but you can still be responsive when you're choking until you've choked too long and you don't have air and then you pass out. But that's something that if I have time, I'll talk about at the end. But otherwise, come take my class. I can't give away all my secrets. Okay. Infant CPR. Any other questions on kids? Has anyone ever done CPR? I'm just curious. Really? What happened?
My father-in-law
stopped. Wow. And did he survive?
No.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. What's your story? Oh. Did they survive? Wow. So CPR increases the chance of bystander CPR, meaning doing CPR as a not paramedic, not nurse, not doctor, just like someone who witnesses an arrest, increases the chance of survival by 2 to 3 times. So it's a 200 to 300 times more likely rate of survival than doing nothing at all. Now, some people, it's obviously the Lord has called them home and it's their time, but it is pretty incredible the amount of times. I'll tell you a story. We had a 15-year-old a couple months ago that was walking home from school and suddenly collapsed, and a nurse was happening to get into her car to go start her shift. So she witnessed him collapse. She was at his side within 10 seconds administering CPR. She called 911. There happened to be an ambulance on the other side of the street, which, like, I get chills talking about it, but, like, within 20 seconds, you had a nurse, paramedics performing CPR. The kid came to the hospital. We crashed them to ECMO, which is the highest level of life support you can get. And the kid made a miraculous recovery with no damage to the brain. Because somebody witnessed it and started compressing the chest, they were able to circulate his brain enough to get oxygen, where he came out with no deficit, which is like a freaking miracle. So anyways, it works if it's done effectively. And even if, like I said, you miss a couple numbers, you miss a couple rounds, like whatever, compressions save lives. So push deep, hard, and fast. Okay, on to the babies. Okay, these little peanuts. So an infant is known as a child 0 to 12 months of age. So again, parents are like, well, my 3-month-old like is so much smaller than my 12-month-old, whatever. I get it. It is a big age range. But again, the American Heart Association has just kind of standardized CPR. So infants 0 to 12 months of age. A couple things that are similar with the babies. Number one, scene safety is still your number one priority, right? So you cannot save a baby with a car that's on fire and you put your life on the line. You can do your best to try to get them out, but you're not gonna risk your life, right, to save somebody else. You still want to tap and shout for responsiveness. The difference is instead of tapping and shouting at their chest, you're tapping and shouting at their feet. So baby, are you okay? Are you okay? Again, the baby's not responsive. The baby's not opening their eyes. The startle reflex, they're not moving when you're tapping their feet. So at this point, just like in pediatrics, you're going to shout for help. If you have your phone on you, you can call 911. But you're not going to delay the initiation of CPR to call 911. You're going to begin your CPR. Just like in peds, you're going to try to expose their chest as quickly and as best as you can without fumbling and wasting time. And then just like pediatrics, like I mentioned, a couple of things that are important. Number one, they're on a hard surface. So you cannot compress a baby on a changing table. You're not doing it on their crib mattress. You're not doing it on your bed. They are on the ground on a hard surface. Your compressions will be ineffective if there's anything plush underneath them. So bring them carefully to a hard spot in your house. And then, like I said, their chest is exposed. And then before you begin compressions, you're going to scan the chest and assess for rise and fall of the chest for 5 seconds, but no longer than 10. And then you're going to begin CPR. So just like in pediatrics, babies, infants tend to go down for respiratory reasons, meaning they have sick lungs, so their lungs get filled with fluid, and then secondarily, their heart stops. So it's really important that we begin CPR and do at least 2 minutes or 5 rounds of high-quality CPR before we frantically go get our phone. Now, the beauty of an infant versus like an 8-year-old is, God forbid I don't have my phone on me and it's been 2 minutes and I've been doing CPR on the ground and it's effective CPR, I can compress the baby in my arms while I frantically run around the house to go get my phone. This is not gonna be as adequate as this, but it's something's better than nothing, right? So we're just gonna keep compressing the chest. We don't care how many we've done. We're doing it as deep, hard, and fast as we can while we go get our phone. When we get our phone, we bring the baby back down. We begin again at 1. Does that make sense? Okay, so when I'm doing CPR on a baby, like I said, kids on a hard surface, non-responsive. Let's just say Sally Joe went to take a nap, and she's napping longer than normal, so I go into her room, and I find her unresponsive and blue in her crib. So I'm going to take her out of her crib, bring her on a hard surface, do a quick exam of her, tap her feet, baby, are you okay? Are you okay? Baby's not responsive. Baby's not moving, not opening their eyes. I brought her down to a hard surface. I'm going to expose her chest. Is she breathing? I don't see her chest moving. So boom, I'm going to start CPR. I don't have my phone on me, so it's SOL. I'm going to begin compressions. So on a baby, the way that you're going to compress, again, landmark is still the same. Our heart is in the same place whether you're 1 year old or 500 years old. It doesn't matter. Your heart's still in the same spot. So mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. Now, because these little peanuts are obviously smaller in size, you're going to take your two fingers, bring them mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone, and you're going to compress straight down. So you're using the two-finger technique to compress when you're by yourself. A couple things to note, when I'm compressing by myself, the baby is laying horizontally. They're not laying like this, okay? So they're horizontal to me. And again, I'm gonna use my two fingers and compress straight down. So because I'm by myself, I'm still gonna perform 30 compressions. So the three things are the same. Your rate is still 100 to 120 compressions per minute. Your depth is still one-third the depth of the chest, about 1.5 inches, and your recoil is still just as important. So you can't compress a baby's heart really fast. It's not gonna do anything, and you can't hop off the chest. It's not gonna do anything. You're gonna compress straight down and let the chest come back to its normal position, and you're gonna go fast, staying alive. So it's that same beat. It's a quick rhythm. So 30 compressions. And then I'm gonna perform two breaths. So it's gonna look something like this. So she's not responsive. I pulled her out of her crib. I exposed her chest. Baby, are you okay? Are you okay? She's not moving, not waking up, not startling, nothing. I exposed her chest. I'm gonna peek. There's no rise and fall of the chest. I've been looking for 5 seconds, but no longer than 10. I'm gonna take my two fingers, mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. And then from here, I'm gonna compress straight down at a rate of 100 to 120 compressions per minute at a depth of a third the depth of the chest and allowing the chest to recoil in between each compression. Again, I don't have my phone on me. I can't call 911, so it is what it is. I'm gonna perform 30 compressions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, staying alive. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I'm still counting out loud. 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. From there, I'm gonna perform two breaths. Now, how we perform breaths on infants is a little bit different because if you look at these babies in the room, you can't see their necks because they're short and fat. They're gone. They're like, nah. So when you perform a head tilt chin lift, it's a lot smaller than an adult. Their airways aren't nearly as long. You don't have to pry their neck open with all your might. An adult person has a big head, a bigger airway, so you do have to kind of open their head a little bit more. Infants, it's small. Head tilt chin lift. Now where things change is you're actually gonna bring your mouth around their nose and their mouth. So you make out with your baby. Okay, if you don't believe me, try it. If it's your kid, make out with them. Your mouth will fit around their nose and their mouth. If for whatever reason you have a oddly small sized mouth and your infant has a long size from their nose to the, whatever, okay, plug their nose. It's not a big deal. The point is you're creating a seal around their entire airway. Again, if you cannot create a seal around their airway, the point of plugging the nose is to occlude the upper airway so you can still create a seal with their mouth, okay? So I've done my 30 compressions, small head tilt chin lift. I'm bringing my mouth around their nose and their mouth, and then I'm gonna inhale my normal breath. My exhalation into their mouth is about the amount of air I can hold in the pockets of my cheek. So right back to compression. So 30 compressions, small head tilt chin lift, my mouth around their nose and mouth. I took a normal breath in. I'm gonna exhale the air in my cheek. Right back to compression. Again, what if they're choking? What if they have an occlusion in their airway? What if I don't see the chest rise and fall? I'm not gonna waste time figuring out the airway. I'm gonna go right back to compressions and try it on the next round. You never wanna take time away from compressions because that's the most important part in CPR. Anything you do extra like breaths is just a bonus. The reason people ask all the time, why do we exhale our air into this person? I thought we exhale like CO2 and waste product. And the reason is because when we take an inhale in, like you and I right now breathing, we're breathing 21% oxygen. Room air, the percent of oxygen you're actually getting in your body is 21%. When you exhale, yes, I'm exhaling some waste product, but in that exhalation, I have 18% oxygen. So I'm administering this person 18% oxygen by exhaling into their lungs, still better than 0% oxygen, right? So that's why they, if you love the person, you know the person, you trust the person, you're going mouth to mouth, but otherwise just do compressions. And same thing with the baby. It's someone else's baby, they have a weird rash all over their mouth, like maybe it's a herpes thing, like you're like, I'm not down for that, no worries. Just keep doing compressions, it's fine. The baby's, you're still helping them. I say that because I've seen stories of families being like, I'm not going mouth to mouth, and then the kid dies, and you're like, lack of education, you can still save a life not going mouth to mouth, so it's still just as important. Okay, now where things change. So that's 30 to 2 again. I'm by myself. I don't have help. Now I've done 2 minutes or 5 rounds of good CPR. Now I'm going to go get my phone. But like I said, an infant, the beauty of it is you compress and you go run to the kitchen or run wherever your phone is and get your phone. You call 911, you put them on speaker, you put the baby back down, and you resume with compressions. Now where things change is if I have a partner. If I have a partner. A perfect scenario would be, let's say your husband's working from home, you go to get the baby out of the crib, baby's blue, not responsive, you yell, babe, I need your help, something's wrong, the partner comes in, you call 911, go call 911, you begin compressions like this. 30 to 2, I'm by myself. As soon as my husband comes into the room to help me, we turn the baby, my husband starts with compressions because I'm tired and I need a break. He's gonna do what's known as the two-finger encircling technique. So basically, you take your hand and you grip the baby's rib cage and chest cavity so that your thumb is now mid-nipple line, bottom half of the breastbone. And your husband or whoever's there to help you, your mom, your grandma, your nanny, is gonna begin compressions from this position. And then as the breather, so I'm compressing here, the breather is here. On the side, so you're out of the compressor's way. The worst thing when you're doing CPR is when people are in your way. Like, get out of my way, right? You need space. So then the breather will come here, okay? So your husband or whoever's there with you is gonna begin compressions using the two-finger encircling technique. Our compression to breath ratio, again, because there's two people and it's an infant, switches from 30 to 2 down to 15 to 2. So again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 11, 12, 13. If I'm breathing, I hear 12, 13. I'm down, ready to rock and roll. 14, 15, breath, 1, 2. So there's like 2 seconds off the chest. It's very seamless and it's quick. Questions on infant? Yes.
So once they're just with you, are you going to switch with them? And then are you switching baby moving?
Either way, whatever's faster. Usually it's the baby. Honestly, because then you're like, oh, you hit me, and you went this way, and I was supposed to go, and now we're fighting. Like, just go like this. Faster. Okay, any other questions? Any other questions? No questions. We all are fully confident. Okay, I guess I did my job. Okay, so like I said, you guys, oh, yes, what? I would love to hear from you. Wait, say it one more time. How often what?
The person's not choking causing the arrest. What else causes it? They've already
developed
sick or like...
Exactly. Sick lungs. Okay. In kids, sick lungs. So it's either an asthmatic, it's RSV, it's flu, it's pneumonia, it's the chance of your kid going down in a cardiac arrest. Usually those parents already know their kid is born with a congenital heart defect. So they're aware that cardiac arrest could take their child. That's different. But most kids, their hearts don't just stop. It's usually their lungs. So they get sick. Parents don't know what to look out for. Parents dismiss it. Oh, they're going to get better tomorrow. And then they don't get better. And then they get dehydrated. And then the mucus thickens. And then it's like this revolving circle, which I talk about so much in my courses because I can't tell you how many kids come to the ER in an arrest because of something that could have been prevented. Because they just wait too long. And kids compensate really, really, really well until they don't. And then when they don't, they go down fast.
So yeah, it's sick lungs. Fluid usually is the culprit. Any other questions? Okay, cool. Well, you guys, I'm going to be in the back if you have questions about anything we've learned. If you want to get your hands on the mannequins for like a couple minutes, I finished a little bit early so that you guys have an opportunity if you want to. The adult one is pretty humbling. If you've never done compressions on a mannequin, it's like full body workout. And then I'm also selling magnets. I always bring these handy magnets. It's just like the 1, 2, 3 on CPR. They're $5 a magnet. They're awesome to have in your purse, in your, you know, put them on your fridge before you like grab the bottle or the glass of wine, whatever you're into, and like just look at it really quick and make sure you're good. Like I said, I'm booking into October, November. So if you guys have any questions about hosting a class, you want to get your MOPS group together, I'm so passionate about what I do because it's saving lives and I can't stop sharing it. So anyways, thank you for your time. I hope you learned so much.